Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Hello. Oh, it must be that time of the week for your All Paws Pet Talk fix. It's Deb Wolf, your host of All Paws Pet Talk. And today we have with us my friend. I've had her on the show before. She answers the deep, penetrating questions like, why do dogs love balls? Oh, yes, she's not afraid to go there. But today we'll be talking about different things. We're talking to Caroline Coyle. Welcome to the show, Caroline.
Hi, Deb. I am so glad you had me back.
Oh, no, it's good. We always laugh a lot on our shows, and you seem to get the information out anyway. So we manage to get people understanding their pets better, but at the same time, we laugh about it. So what have you got going? You've got a new book out, don't you?
You know what? I can hardly keep track sometimes. And, you know, I'm still – actually, I have a secret project out I probably shouldn't even mention yet except to tell you that it's an app about dogs. But mm-hmm. So I can't talk about that yet. So I still have my dog encyclopedia that seems to be everybody's favorite, plus a couple of fun ones, the one well, of course, why do dogs like balls, which it seems like everyone comes up with another question from that every time I talk to them.
And the cat companion one to that, what was the cat's title again? I can't remember. It's a question like that.
It's why do cats bury their poop?
Oh.
Now, I have to say, you know, as an author, we don't get to name our own books. Most people don't know that.
And it's
so these
frustrating
weren't my choices.
Sometimes. When they pick a title you don't think is catchy or you don't think it's appropriate and you're stuck with it.
I know. And 9 times out of 10, the publisher does know best, but still you're left grumbling and thinking, that's not what I would have named it.
I don't know. Publishers go under. They don't know best. They're business people. They don't know. They don't know what's going to catch, you know, what's going to make the dog lover.
I know, but the problem with why do dogs love balls, I said, well,
that's good.
One problem with that is I don't know why they love balls, really, because they're fun. It's like you had to pick a question I couldn't answer.
Oh, and as a professor, as someone who deals with this whole set up the question, answer the question, start the paragraph, end the paragraph, that must drive you crazy. How can you write an essay where you propose a question you don't answer?
Well, actually, as a professor, I am cool with saying I don't know. I really don't have a problem with that because that's when you get to do, well, how can I find out? How can I devise an experiment that will tell me, you know, why do dogs love balls? Although I'm not really seeing that we're going to be getting the NIH funding for this, you know, this grant to study this.
Oh, I don't know. They put grants toward the lesser things. I think that might be eligible. Jeez, you could probably get private funding from, like, Spalding or something, you know. You got to go where the money is for that. Go to the ball companies. Why do dogs like balls? Oh, boy. Okay, so best breeds. You've got this encyclopedia of dog breeds, and it's super hot right now, so sometimes I feel really sorry for the St. Bernard who lives in Florida or the opposite, you know, the greyhound living up north. And I think, like, why wouldn't they get a dog that actually suits the climate they're in? Do you ever feel about that? Do you ever think that way when you see a Samoyed sweating it out in Las Vegas or something?
I mean, I was driving down – I'm in Florida. And I was driving down the road the other day, and there was someone – dogging, and they had, I don't know, a bulldog, I think it was, you know, and I just almost pulled over and said, you know, let me put your dog in my air conditioning, because it really is so dangerous to do that, and they did turn at that point and go into their house, so I was like, okay, this time I won't get myself
beat up. Yeah, he survived this jog.
But it's so foolish, and I think that so often we get a dog that, you know, fulfills our fantasy, whether that's the Great Dane and you've got a little two-seater to tout him around in, or you know, you love your white furniture and everything so nice and gleaming, and you thought, you know what'll work? A Newfoundland with black hair that sheds and a lot of drool, or like you say, a St. Bernard, that'll be great for Texas. It's just not it's not smart. It's not doing yourself any favor, and it's sure not doing the dog any favor. So I think so many people forget climate when they're choosing a breed, and that's one reason in that encyclopedia I actually give the dogs different ratings for how well they deal with hot and cold. Dogs can deal with cold better than they can with hot because they're actually, you know, they evolved from a wolf, as you know.
Yeah, shade is their thing. Beach is not their thing.
They're very
nighttime is more their thing, not full daylight, noontime jog in the heat. That's not their thing.
Exactly. Their whole metabolism is aimed at keeping them warm and not really so much at cooling them off. And as you know, they don't sweat. They cool themselves through all these folds in their muzzle, what are called the nasal turbinates. And little flat-faced dogs, for instance, just don't have much muzzle space in there for that. It's one reason they overheat so easily, and people forget that. And also just in general, the bigger the body and the rounder the body and the more the hair, of course, that's going to heat up more.
Yeah.
So,
you know what I noticed as you said that about dogs being more suited to the cold? I noticed as I travel around the world or as I look at footage even on TV around the world when they show things like refugee camps or poverty-stricken areas, you'll see in the background the wild dogs in the area. You often see them, and I'm always looking at them. And even when I travel, I notice that, you know, it's that hybrid vigor thing, that as they mate, you know, the strongest survive. So in a hot climate, you don't really get those giant dogs you get up here. In the north, the wild dogs in Canada are huge and furry. They're large animals with big, you know, big, broad bodies and tons of fur. And if you go to Mexico or someplace like that, you get these little, tiny, lean little desert dogs with pointy ears, and they're almost sandy brown color, almost all of them. You know, there's kind of that dogs are marvelously adaptable, aren't they?
Right. And, you know, there's actually a term for the type of dog you're describing, called pariah dogs. And they do have in common, they're usually, in most areas of the world, kind of medium-sized. Their fur's not too long, not too short. They've got the prick ears. They look kind of like a little bit of a Spitz look, but with the shorter hair and maybe
it's almost like a giant chihuahua. It's almost like a
people-sized
chihuahua. That's what it looks like. It's sort of medium dog. Everywhere, though. All over the world, wherever it's hot, this is what you see. It's very interesting, isn't it?
It is. Even in this country, there's a breed of dog called the Carolina dog, and they were found running loose in the I think South Carolina, Georgia area, and are believed to be what remains of Native Indian dogs, from hundreds of years ago. And now there are actually some people that have, you know, they caught them and they're breeding them, and they were making, you know, great dogs. But they look like that. They kind of look like coyotes in a way.
Well, that makes sense because the coyote is the best survivor of all the canines. The oldest canine earth, and he'll be here after the rest of us, no doubt. I can't get over how bright coyotes are, how intensely intelligent, clever. I interact with them a lot because I get called in when people are having problems, and they're a mighty enemy in huge numbers, and they're as smart as we are. And I swear they learn from each other generation to generation. But we can talk about that another time. We're sort of touching on purebred extinction. And I saw that in your email and I thought, purebred extinction? Isn't it evolution? Isn't it just that we don't really need the barking hound dogs anymore the way we used to, and we kind of need non-shedding hybrids that are good with kids, so the demands change? I mean, what's so sacred about the breeds created in Germany in the 1900s and 1800s? Why must we stick with those and not dogs that fit us? I don't know. I'm just asking.
No, right? I think that's a great. First of all, the first part of your question, I think, makes a lot of sense. Why are we so, you know, we do drag our feet about a new breed coming along, and it's like, oh, well, you know, nope, we've got these breeds. We can't add any to them, and that's not realistic, because if we're going to subscribe to the idea that dogs help us, we just do different things these days. And so if we come up with a dog who's a better, you know, service dog, or heck, a dog that's more fun to go take surfing or something. I don't know. Whatever you want to do with dogs.
Great. Okay, guys, we're running out of time on this, on this segment with Caroline Goyle. So we'll be back and we'll find out more about why Caroline's saying, hey, maybe it's not so bad that there's new breeds and some of the breeds are kind of disappearing. Maybe that's what she's saying. I'm not sure. We'll get there when we come back with All Paws Pet Talk Radio. I'm your host, Deb Wolf. Stay tuned.
I'm your doggy, and I love you, and you know that I need you too.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
Back on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with Deb Wolf, and I'm here talking with Caroline Coyle, and she's a professor, and she teaches all kinds of things and writes all kinds of books about dogs and cats. And today we were just getting to this issue of, you know, should we be so upset if a breed disappears, and should we be so reluctant to accept a new one? I mean, take the Labradoodle, Golden Doodle thing. Like, there they are in Australia for years recognized. Here they're barely recognized, or grudgingly so, and only some of them, and only, oh my goodness, I have customers who need Golden Doodles and Labradoodles far more than they would need, let's just say, oh, I don't want to name a dog because I'm going to get in trouble, but an ancient primitive hunting dog hound. So what's so wrong with letting these new breeds evolve and some of the old ones that aren't in use go to the wayside? What's wrong with that, Caroline?
I don't think there's, well, first of all, like, as far as letting new breeds in, I think we should. Let me give you an example. There was, probably 20 years ago, you know what a whippet looks like. They started coming out with long-haired whippets, which
right.
They claimed
Oh, that's like a Saluki, though. What's the difference?
Yeah, well, no, they were long-haired all over. And now they've changed their name because they admitted that, well, they crossed them with Shelties. So it's a Whippet-Sheltie cross. They're beautiful dogs. If you like a sighthound and they like that sort of racy look, it's the only small sighthound that comes with long hair. They're great dogs. They make wonderful, glamorous, but, you know, fast and obedient.
So they look like Afghans? Do they look like small
they
Afghans?
They look more like small Borzois. Miniature Borzoi would be the best description.
Borzois have this long, skinny head, and they're unbelievably tall. Like, you look at them and you think, is that real? They almost look like a statue. They're so sculpted in their look. And they're really good high jumpers. I know they're not supposed to be, but they are.
And they were sort of the, you know, Art Deco dog of the 30s. And the only thing wrong with a Borzoi is they're just too big for most people. So now you could have what they are calling a silken windhound or silken wind sprite. They still have it, you know, they argue a bit about the name. And it's still not AKC registered, even though they've been around for decades now. And it's time to wonder, you know, why? What's these dogs fill a niche? People want them. So what's the problem with letting them come in, you know?
And I really like with the Golden Doodle thing and the Standard Poodle thing. I mean, there is a need for non-shedding dogs in service that will train up like Goldenson Labs. So where, what's the problem here, you know?
Exactly. You know, and for, from AKC's point of view, they just want them to be true breeding. And a lot of the designer dog breeds, as you know, are just first-generation crosses. And when you bring them together, you get a mishmash. But the many of the Labradoodle lines truly have been being bred for generations now. At some point, you have to say, this is as much a breed as any of these other breeds when they recognized them at the end of the 19th century. So, you know.
Well, see, there's something. It's like a time warp. And I see this in other areas of life, too. It's not just dog breeding. I see it in certain religious communities where they'll sort of pick a certain era there, you know, and then stick with that kind of dress and those ways, even though those aren't necessarily the ways of the ancient book they're following. It's just a very interesting kind of, you know, it's like those breeds are good. Everything created in Germany at that at the turn of the century, yeah, those are good, and everything else, no. Well, why? You know, Germans had a lot of fun making dog breeds back then, but why can't we, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Why is there this, you know, assumption that people in the 1920s, for instance, when most of the standards were written, were necessarily smarter than we were? I don't know.
Oh, they weren't, because in terms of genetics, we know so much more. We know how to prevent brain disease in King Charles Cavalier Spaniels now that they didn't know then. You know, we know how to test for the hips and the eyes and the things, epilepsy and the Goldens and all the different things that come up in certain breeds. And that's really what the Kennel Club's about, is making sure people are doing things ethically and properly and soundly and using sound parents. And, I mean, when it comes down to it, that's what the Kennel Club's ought to be about anyway. Not
it
about
is. There's some lag there because, you know, pure breeding was what the Kennel Club were based upon. And now we're finding out that in some cases, you know, maybe we have to, you know, stick another breed even in the gene pool in some, you know, more drastic examples.
Well, you know, that's done. That's exactly what seeing eye dogs are. They look like purebreds to most of us, but they're not. Most of the seeing eye dogs, almost all of them, at least in Canada, are mostly lab or mostly golden with a relative of the other thrown in there every few generations. So they'll be completely 100% golden with a grandpa who's a lab, or completely 100% lab with a grandpa who's a golden. Now, that's not to say they just went out on the street and found somebody. These are carefully selected dogs for temperament and, you know, health, and because you're not going to spend $30,000 to train a dog who's going to then go lame or not train up nice. So, I mean, these are well-selected dogs, but they found that even with those populations, mixing a little made a huge difference to their health and temperament. So it's interesting, you know. Yeah, it is interesting. And the farmers have been doing this for years. The guys who breed border collies and blue heelers and this kind of thing, who actually rely on them, they'll take their best dog ever and throw him in the mix as a papa whenever they can, you know, even though they're getting part Kelpie or they're getting part, you know, because the dog works better. So we got to think about this hybrid vigor notion, I think. What do you think about it?
Yes. I think as long as it's done. Now, as long as it's done with reason and with genetic knowledge, I think that, you know, the designer dog craze that the country was in the midst of a few years ago got carried away in that it was basically, well, let's breed anything to a poodle. Well, you know, poodles are perfectly fine dogs as they are.
Yeah, I breed standard poodles, and I get all these calls for, you know, schnoodles and cockapoos, and I think, what's wrong with the little poodles I have in my backyard? They're 100% non-shed compared to
I know,
these.
Exactly. Maybe, I kind of really like them.
Yes, maybe no. Well, and as far as what you talked about, climate, I mean, you know, that's the poodle is the very versatile dog. I mean, a bunch of them ran the Iditarod. They can handle.
I was going to bring that up.
Mm-hmm. You want to take them to Florida? You shave them. I mean, they can handle the heat. So there's the dog for everybody, really. But there's stigma about the poodle. People don't realize
you know,
that they're
really
athletic and sporting, and that it has nothing to do with coif and all this coiffure and beauty parlors and all this sort of stuff.
When people ask me about, you know, what are the best dogs, and of course there is no best dog list per se because it depends on what you want or what you need, but that poodle is usually on my top 10 list because they are just, you know, they're a dog who deserves the popularity they have. Yes, I know they can look foo-foo at times. If you don't like that, shave it off.
And there is a cost. Really, you know, like a regular dog, a Heinz 57, you don't have to take to the beauty parlor and spend $100 if it's a large size one every 3 months or 4 months. You know, there is a cost to a poodle.
That's true.
But,
I would have a poodle myself if it weren't for that hair. But I can't. I don't do hair.
Okay. So we were talking before we came on the air, and we might get cut off, but we can always continue this later. You're saying that sometimes when you teach, you know, you'll lecture for a whole hour and then another one, and then at the end you just don't want to talk to anybody. And I thought, ooh, she's revealing her inner cat, you know, when cats just had enough.
That's probably right. I'm one of those cats that gets overstimulated and then just turns around and bites the person because they wouldn't quit petting me.
You see, I think deep down, oh, yeah, I'm getting the one-minute signal. Okay, well, that's all right. We'll be back to talk more in a minute about indoor games you can play with your pets in the heat with Caroline Coyle. But right now, I'm just thinking, you know, I think I get more and more revved up. Like, you asked me if I ever do more than one radio show in a day, and I started laughing because right now it's summer. It's easy for me. My kids are home. I'm relaxed. But some days in the winter, oh, yeah, I'll do three or four in a day, hour upon hour of live radio. And I just get more and more revved up. I think inside me is a border collie, you know, just work till I crash, right? I can just get more and more into the topics. But I was like that as a student, too. I was like one of these people that studied long, long spells, 8, 9, 10-hour spells kind of thing. Yeah, with little breaks, but not much. Yeah, border collie. You know what, border collie, for those listening, okay, we got to go. We'll be back with Caroline Coyle. Stay tuned at All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Is your itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo look it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426 or on the web www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
Deb Wolf, here in the rainforest where it's been sunny for, I don't know, 10 days. Gorgeous. Yes, yes, I'm rubbing it in. You wake up in the morning and it's cold in the house. You need socks and a hoodie, as kids do. And then by the time lunch comes around, it's 80 and it's sunny and it's beautiful and everything's in bloom. The blueberries are out and the birds are everywhere and it's just lovely, although the wildlife's out. So people out here, if you're out, you know, you will be outside, watch it when you're berry picking. There's bears, lots of them. And there's also cougars. A kid was grabbed on Vancouver Island today. He's okay. He's just going to be scraped up. But last year at this time, an 18-month-old was grabbed and killed by a cougar. And just last night, a child, I believe he was 7-year-old. Oh, my gosh, 7. That's kind of big. Anyway, a 7-year-old was grabbed by a cougar. So we all have to really watch that. And I want people to really be careful of wildfires, not just here but everywhere. If it's hot and sunny, then don't throw your cigarette butt. Don't throw your match. Just keep it. Just keep it till you're somewhere with sand and an ashtray because you'd be surprised how long that can last and heat things up. And if you do have a campfire, then bury it and water it and bury it and water it and do the right thing. Show your kids how to do it. There's 1,000 trees in Cyprus that somehow survived a 12,000-hectare fire. Everything else burned to the ground, and only 12 of these trees were damaged, and only a little bit, and 1,000 of them survived. So scientists are going there right now to figure this out, and I think this might be a key to our future because it seems like the wildlife, the trees, everything is under siege in wildfires right now. So we've all got to be careful. So we've got Caroline Coyle on the line, and she's talking to us about, well, she's going to tell us about indoor games now that we're talking about the heat and what you can do with your pets indoors, your dogs, But before we get to that, we left you all hanging on the dog breed question. So is it okay if some breeds go extinct?
I would say actually, well, let me start that by saying I bet you didn't know there's already about 200 breeds that have gone extinct. It is the natural course throughout history. There's breeds like the Hare Indian dogs, the St. John's water dog, even the turn spit dog that was so popular for, you know, running and turning the meat spit in the 1800s, pretty much extinct, although some people think that its descendants can be found in the Glen of Amal Terrier. But there's still several breeds. There are a lot of breeds that are somewhat in danger of extinction now. Even in England, they came up with a list that was kind of startling a few months ago that included the otterhound, the English setter, the Scottish deerhound, and the Skye terrier. All these are, you know, British Isle breeds, and they're all in danger of extinction.
Whoa, English setter? Are you kidding me?
I think they mean the English setter in their country, because I think of the English setter in our country as being, pretty popular.
An English setter looks like an Irish setter, but instead of being rusty red, it's often white with splotches, like brown or black or speckles or something like that. That's the ones I've seen, right? Am I right on
that?
Yeah,
exactly. And there's a lot of field
not
ones.
A woman here. That's interesting.
But I do believe other breeds, like take the otterhound. That is rare all over the world. I think the last year more than 50 of them were registered with the AKC was over a decade ago. And worldwide, they estimate their population to be about 600 dogs. So, but 600 otterhounds, just take the word hound off that, replace it with, so it's just, what if the situation where there were only 600 otters left in the world, we'd all be freaking out. You know, save the otter.
Yeah, but you know what? If there was 1,000 different kinds of otters and there was one called a brown otter and there was a black and a gray and a red, and I don't know if we'd be freaking out the same way. I mean, maybe.
Yeah, or maybe it'd be like the little brown water salamander. I don't know. It is a question. So, yeah, will the world be a different place without the otter hound? No, I don't think we ever really need it to catch otters for us anymore. Although,
you know what, though, I have to stop there. But look, can we go back to that last point? If the otter was extinct, the otter wasn't man-made the same way.
Right.
So it's not, it's sort of like, I mean, from a religious point of view, we're destroying God's creations. Or from an environmentalist point of view, we're destroying what was meant to be here to keep the earth in check. You know, whereas the otter hound that man produced to do a job man had that no longer has, is it really the same?
It is and it isn't. Of course, it is man-made. I think if we tried, we could recreate a facsimile of it. Of course, it wouldn't be quite the same. But it's sort of like, does it matter if we burn down a museum that has artifacts from the 1800s or 1400s or, you know, B.C.
Oh, that's a good comparison. Like the difference between destroying a forest, a sacred forest, or destroying an art gallery or a museum or a church or, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because I think each of these dog breeds it's a bit of living history that tells us what was very important to a particular group of people in a particular place and time in their culture. So an otter hound at one time was, you know, wow, you have an otter hound. You're really fancy.
You know what? This rings true for me when I think of something like the Malamute or the Husky. If they were no longer here, if the whole earth warms so much that they really just aren't necessary anymore, mm-hmm. we'd never fully understood what it was to be pulled by a sled like that and how that saved lives and how the whole north depended on it as a main survival and transportation, how these dogs were more than just dogs to those people. You know, we'll never get it if we lose that dog. So
right.
I kind of get it when I define it more in a, you know, context I understand more personally.
Well,
so I get what you're saying about the otter.
Yeah. Exactly, and it's like some people who, you know, grow heritage or heirloom, you know, tomatoes and things like that. They're like, well, they're not big boys. Why should I grow those? Well, I don't know. It's just because they're kind of neat to have these same seeds from stock that people used 100 years ago. So I guess my plea is for people, you know, if you're going out there and you're looking to buy a purebred dog and you don't know what you like and everything else is equal, I don't know, pick the rare breed. You know, be part of history, be part of saving a breed rather than picking, you know, the breed that doesn't need your help. You know, I just think it's kind of a, you know, an exciting thing to do if everything else is equal. Don't ever go and pick a breed just because it's rare and you're the only one in your block or your city with one.
Well, that I think people do. I think they try and be unusual or they try and follow a trend. Like a couple years ago, everybody had these little Havanese dogs, and then it was French Bulldog. And then it's every time one of those movies comes out, it's Chihuahua, you know, I Chihuahua, here we go again, right?
Right, and then but I'm guessing they don't really know what a rare breed is, because when they go to the Frenchie or even the Havanese, neither of those is, you know, what we consider to be a rare breed. Again, you know, looking at the Otterhound, we're talking about a breed that might have 25 dogs a year registered in this country. And one reason they have so few registered is the breeders can't breed any more litters because they don't have people to buy them. You know, if they had some good homes, they might say, well, you know, maybe we could breed, you know, a litter this year. But most of them can't. So, you know, instead of getting the Lab, which are great dogs, or even the Frenchie, which are great but expensive dogs, I don't know. Look to see if there's something, you know, down past the 100 point of popularity and see if, you know, something there appeals to you.
But make sure it's a dog where the needs, exercise needs in particular, suit you. If you're not a hound person, don't get a hound. Because a lot of the dogs that are becoming extinct are hound dogs, and the reason is they're loud and then they're meant to run. So if you don't, you know, want to go barreling through the forest on your bicycle with your dog, boo-boo, 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 running along beside you barking, maybe it's not for you. Now, I wouldn't say all hounds are terrible. Beagles make great pets for some families, but there is that baying, barking tendency that you're digging too that you kind of have to deal with. And the same for terriers. If you're picking a rare breed, make sure it's in the right group, the group you know will fit you. The group
right.
You
and
you
I would actually sort of
handle and exercise and enjoy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to slam hounds or terriers. It's just their particular personality. And you kind of have to be up for the fact that the hound's going to put his nose to the ground and follow what he smells. And the terrier's going to be announcing arrivals and departures and people along the fence. If you're, you know, I mean, you can train against all of that, but it's like you can also train a golden retriever not to go in the lake, but it's a little bit hard. We're going to come back with Caroline Coyle and have her respond to that because we're running out of time because I know she has a response. And then we're going to talk about indoor games. So stay tuned to All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that.
I'm hungry, tastes great, I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait, I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great.
Is your dog a finicky eater due to health problems, old age, or just fussiness? Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet will boost your pet's appetite and nutrition for less than 40 cents a day. If you are adding expensive canned food to kibble to get your pet to eat, Super Gravy is the earth-friendly alternative with no can waste and for less than half the cost. Visit supergravy.com for more info and bring pure joy back to your companion's mealtime. Now through Labor Day, save 20% on Super Gravy and all Clear Conscience pet treats at Pet Food Warehouse in South Burlington and Shelburne.
I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great. I love food.
Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a healthcare provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk Call-In Radio Show with the valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Hello and welcome to All Paws Pet Talk Radio. I'm so glad you could join us today. My name is Cynthia Siegel and I'd like to say hello to all our furry friends and their people out there. I'm on today with my co-host, Stacy Moore. Stacy the Mutt Man, how are you today?
I'm just fine, Cynthia. Having a great day. A little bit hot, but we'll deal with it.
Hot seems to be the season, that's for sure. I'm very excited about our guest today. His name is Michael Damian, known, well, to some of us, from his 18-year run on the soap opera The Young and Restless. That's actually where I first fell in love with him when I was 18. He's been a heartthrob ever since. So today's exposure with Michael is a little more exciting, I think, for us. Plus the fact that Michael has a brand new movie, a prequel, I believe they call that. Michael, are you with us?
Hi. Yes, I am. How are you guys doing?
Great. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm better now that I heard you had a crush on me when you were 18. I'm honored. I'm so glad you like Danny Romolotti.
Oh, thank you. It's also very exciting to hear about your August 13th opening, that's right, at the Grove in Los Angeles?
Yeah, it's very close now. I've been writing and directing over the last few years, and the latest film that's coming out is Marley and Me, The Puppy Years, and it's the prequel, of course, to Marley and Me, and it just was an extraordinary experience. I had the great pleasure of writing it, co-writing it with my wife, Janine, and we're both, of course, dog lovers, and now having a chance to direct it and work with these amazing puppies, and it was just an awesome experience, and it's going to be released on the 16th of August, but the premiere is on the 13th at the Grove in L.A.
That should be very exciting. Are you doing the red carpet with puppies attending?
We're going to have puppies. They're going to do some, some agility. We're going to have, the red carpet, a big outdoor screening. They're going to do a big screen outside so that everyone can watch, and you can bring your dogs and, sit in the park there in the middle of the Grove and see the premiere. And it is open to the public, and it's a free event that we're having. And then, of course, there'll be a lot of stars, attending and, the red carpet.
How exciting. How did you and your wife decide to do a prequel to that great movie, Marley and Me?
Well, we also made the family film Flicka 2, the horse, the horse adventure.
Right.
And we had, of course, a dog in Flicka as well. And we've sort of, and then before that we did a movie called Moondance Alexander, which was another horse story. So we've been working with a lot of animals and we love it. And Fox approached us with the idea they wanted to, bring back Marley and Me, but sort of start back when he was a puppy, which I think was a great idea. So really, the movie is just about Marley from his perspective when he was, a tiny little puppy and all the trouble he got into and his adventures about how he tries to be a good puppy. And, humans don't always understand, that puppies have needs and they're trying to be good, but it's not always that easy, And yes, he is the world's worst dog, but he has a big heart and in the end, he really learns a lot, from his adventures.
I absolutely, love the comparisons you make between puppies and people and in the movie Marley and Me, between Marley and people and how you had, I have to say, the most eloquent way of bringing up the truth that people go through in life, the lessons that they learn, but showing it from a dog perspective, I thought was the most touching way to get beautiful messages across. I was really moved by the movie. As a matter of fact, I just recently called up Netflix to get a copy of Marley and Me to screen it again. And the gentleman I spoke to on the phone said, "Oh my God, I loved that movie. The directing was so great and the messages were so wonderful. Oh, I hope they do another movie." So when I told him you have a movie coming out, he was very excited. So Netflix is already behind you.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, it's, you know, my wife and I love dogs. We've always had dogs. We have a wonderful a little rescue we got. Her name is Bella, and we take her on the shoots with us. She's, you know, always part of our movie adventures, and we actually tried to get her in Marley and Me, the Puppy Years, and we shot a sequence with her, but, you know, in the editing room, some stuff ends on the cutting room floor, and unfortunately, Bella got cut out of the movie, and I know she's going to be mad at me being the director, but I made it up with a lot of treats, and she's totally cool. She's okay with it.
I think one of the most interesting things about Marley and Me, the Puppy Years, is that you actually used 24 puppies from 5 litters. That must have been a lot of fun on the set.
Oh, it was never a dull day. We had puppies and trainers, and, you know, they're just so cute. And I love when shooting a scene, you have no idea how it's going to turn out because they can just surprise you with something so cute. And a lot of their little outtakes and things that they did, I just used it in the movie because they were spontaneous. And you know, they're just extraordinary. We have a scene where there's a dog named Fuchsia, and she's a bit of a girly dog. And she, everything is pink, and her dog bed is pink. And we start with her scene. She's actually laying on her back. We wrote it in the script. Fuchsia is sunbathing, right? So our trainers taught her to lay on her back, put her hands or her paws are back, you know, and she's just sunbathing. And of course, in our movie, the dogs are talking because I really wanted, if we're going to do a dog's perspective, when we know, then the dogs have to speak and they have to tell us what they're thinking and feeling, you know. And there's somebody at the door, and she's telling her brother puppy, he's saying, "I'm busy sunbathing. You go see who's at the door," you know. And the brother is eating, you know, food, and he's like, "Well, I'm busy snacking. Why don't you go? You're lazy." And so there's sort of, you know, I can imagine them having this conversation, but you'd be hearing dog barking, but now we actually get to hear what they're saying.
I think it's a great view of the world from a dog, and it's about time that we had more movies like this. I think you've hit a real niche. The most amazing thing to me about Marley and Me, and now your new movie, is that it appeals to such a broad range of people and has such a beautiful message. So it's one of those, even though in the end Marley died, it was one of those movies that you can proudly take your kids to. And I appreciate you for doing that, Michael.
Oh, well, thank you. And I do want to give you one little, I will tell you a tidbit.
Oh, good.
Marley, you're not going to cry. I think you're going to laugh. There's some touching scenes in the movie. But we just focus on Marley as a puppy, and we never leave that sort of time frame, you know? So if you're worried about, I can't face it, another, I saw Marley and Me and it killed me and, you know, crushed me in a good way. People really loved it, but it was hard for certain people at the end, of course. But in this movie, I think you're going to, I'm hoping you're going to be laughing, having a great time. I mean, just Marley's, you know, perspective on the mailman and why he, you know, he really thinks the poor mailman's the evil enemy, you know, just because, think about it, there's this guy that comes to the door, takes things away, you know what I mean, wears funny outfits, and, you know, he's got, you know, he's just dressed differently, he's got little devices on and, you know, whistle or whatever they have, you know, so we just kind of, we wrote it based on what Bella, our dog, taught us so many things, so we just observed Bella closely and watched what she did and what she, how she handles the mailman, how she handles other puppies, how she handles all kinds of different situations, cats, and then wrote it into the story.
Oh, that's fabulous. I'm so excited about this new movie. We have to take a break just for a moment, and we'd like to get back. I want to specifically ask you about coloring puppies and how you managed to make so many perfect puppy doubles. We'll be right back with my host, Stacey Moore, Stacey the Mutt Man, and our guest, Michael Damian.
Think of all the things we could discuss. Boy, if we could walk with the animals and talk with the animals.
Grunt and squeak
and squawk with the animals. And they could squeak and squawk and speak and talk to us.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Squeaky Deaky, I love my squeaky toy, Squeaky Deaky.
Welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk Radio. My name is Cynthia Siegel, your new favorite pet psychic. You can find me at cynthiasiegel.com. And I have the most delicious guest with me today. Her name is Karen Watts. We're continuing with the wonderful story she's sharing of people that have sent in what's the greatest thing that's happening with their cat and dog or pet. So that includes bunnies and birds. Please take advantage of her website, petoftheday.com or dogoftheday.com or catoftheday.com, and maybe your animal will win today. Welcome back, Karen. Thank you.
Hi, Cynthia.
Tell us, I've just been loving your stories. They're so wonderful. Thank you for sharing them with us. You've done this for so long. Are there special stories, let's say, one animal rescuing another?
You know, we recently had one, an unusual one, of one conure rescuing another. Now, conures are smallish parrots, and Kelly was a conure, that a blue-crowned conure, so they're mostly green, and she's got a little sort of aqua on the top of her head. And Kelly was bought at a local pet store when she was about 5 months old. She was very sweet when she was small, but as time went on, she got sort of more ornery and demanded more attention, which her person did the best to provide, but she didn't really seem to be a very happy bird. Then about a year ago, her person was driving down the street. She lives in Florida, and I don't know where you live, but in Florida there are some colonies of conures that have been set free and sort of built their own little flocks. They're not native to Florida, but they've colonized it.
Yeah, and I think that happened. I think that happened after Hurricane Andrew.
There, yeah, different birds who escaped from pet stores, or people just lost their bird in the wild. Mm-hmm. And so her person, Kelly's owner, was driving down the street and noticed a parrot hopping around in the middle of the road. And it was a Nande conure. Now, they look very similar, but they have a black face and a black beak. And this was a wild Nande conure, but its left wing was broken.
Oh.
So she thankfully had a towel in her car and was able to capture the wild conure and take her back.
And wow.
Because she knew, yeah, she knew that otherwise this bird would have died. And she said the whole flock was screaming at her horribly when she was taking the bird away. But, you know, she knew what she had to do. Well, Zippy, who she named the Nande, adapted to captive life extremely well. But she could tell this bird was lonely. Well, one day she walked into what she calls her parrot room and found out that the Nande conure had escaped from her cage and was sitting with the blue-crowned conure, letting her preen her feathers.
Oh, my.
And so now they live happily together. She had not integrated them before because this was a quote-unquote wild bird.
Right. I would never think to do that.
And Kelly, the first bird, has now become much more friendly with her people and much happier. And the wild conure, Zippy, will now even sit on her person's shoulder for short periods of time because that's what Kelly does, too.
Oh, what a great story. I absolutely love the way pets know better than us. Thank goodness.
Yes. You know, that Nande conure said, well, the heck with this. I'm not going to be lonely in my cage over there. I'll go hang out with her over there.
Oh, isn't that great? Do you have stories about cats and dogs living happily ever after together?
We do, but we don't tend to feature a cat and a dog together because, of course, cat of the day has its own site and
right.
dog of the day has its own site. But we have had dogs who not only find kittens who are abandoned,
oh.
but they will carry them home. And, of course, most people think cats and dogs are enemies. But these cats will carry the kitten home and then take care of it and, you know, clean it. And, of course, it takes one swipe of a German Shepherd's tongue to clean the whole kitten.
And what a great visual that is you've just created. Thank you so much for sharing your beautiful stories with us. And I invite our listeners, please, because I know you all have wonderful stories about our delicious furry friends and how much they mean to us. So please take advantage of this opportunity to make your pet famous. You could be having right now in your home, could be the next pet of the day, dog of the day, or cat of the day. So please visit Karen's website, petoftheday.com. And that's such a beautiful name. And catoftheday.com and dogoftheday.com. Tell her that you heard the story on All Paws Pet Talk Radio and that your pet is the next pet of the day. Thank you for your time today, Karen.
Thank you for having me, Cynthia.
Bye for now. And in the last few moments that we have, I would like to thank all our furry friends for gathering their people around the radio to listen to our show today. And I'm sure a lot of you dogs and cats are knowing that you're fully qualified for Pet of the Day. So I invite you to get your people to send a story in and you'll be fabulous as you're featured on the website, on the international web, so that all your friends in other countries can actually see that you were the dog of the day or the cat of the day. And we're knowing that your people will be very proud of you, which they already are. And if you have any concerns about your dog or your cat, please send me an email, cynthia@cynthiasiegel.com. On that website, cynthiasiegel.com, is my phone number as well. If it's something urgent, please call me and let me help. There's many cases where a quick phone call to me helped find out what was wrong so that when you went to the vet or to the hospital, they knew exactly what they were looking for. And what a great way to end all the emotional stress of testing and not knowing. Thank you so much for joining us today. I look forward to reading your emails and answering your questions on the air. Have a great day. Love and hugs to all my furry friends and all their wonderful people. Goodbye from All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Bye, Eddie.
Bye, Sarah.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a healthcare provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.